Leg Effect continues here on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Bonnie North. The fate of the proposed redesign of the Marcus Performing Arts Center is still undecided. The initial plan included removing the Dan Kiley-designed grove of chestnut trees, which is along the south side of the building.
Public reaction was swift and strongly opposed to the destruction of the grove, so much so that the Milwaukee's Historic Preservation Commission voted to give the entire site a temporary historic designation, which stopped any demolition or construction until final determination was made. The commission meets again today at 3 p.m. to determine whether the historic designation should be made permanent. If it votes yes, the Marcus Center would need permission to make any changes, including removing or altering the grove beyond basic maintenance.
In February, we spoke with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's former art and architecture critic, Mary Louise Schumacher, who argued that the architectural and historic significance of Kiley's Grove warranted keeping it as intact as possible. Today, we hear from Jim Shields, the lead architect on the project, and Paul Matthews, the president and CEO of the Marcus Center, who says the redesign was spurred by the center's growth.
We are changing as a performing arts center, and this is something that's been evolving over time. We are not just a performing arts center and just only focusing on what goes on in our stages. We're becoming a community gathering place. We are working very hard to be a performing arts center, a community performing arts center for the entire community. So several years ago, we started doing some research on doing a deeper dive into work we've been doing for 20 years on diversity, community engagement, inclusion, and so forth, with a local group, P3 Group, and they came up with some really good recommendations. And one of the things that they really stressed was that the building from the outside can seem rather foreboding and uninviting. And when people get there, they have a great experience. But they wanted to, they said, you've got to make this be a more welcoming, more visible, more open place. And we knew that we wanted to change it and make it, that in that sense, our plan was mission-driven. We also needed to address the fact that we were a facility that relies over 85% on earned income. So we're looking for new ways to generate earned income. We wanted to, as part of our work as becoming a community gathering place, get a better use out of our building and grounds. Obviously, we're looking for ways to save dollars, operating dollars, as many nonprofits are. Then we turned to HGA and Jim Shields to translate that mission and that vision into reality, if you will, by putting this campus master plan together. Worked a lot with our resident groups, worked a lot with community groups that we collaborate with our board, and got a lot of input, and that's where we ended up with this long-term vision for the Marcus Center. And also, just to say that it hadn't been really had a facelift, if you will, since the mid-90s. That was the last major renovation.
Jim, bringing you in on this from an architectural standpoint, this modernist, some people have called it brutalist building, is by its very nature, when it was built, kind of meant to be foreboding.
That's what brutalism meant.
Exactly. And so how do you work with that without destroying that initial concept, or do you worry about changing the initial idea of the building?
Well, for example, the main entry to the Harry Weiss building was entirely demolished in the mid-1990s, like 96. And then that curving black glass addition was put on, which is not by Weiss. And so I think a lot of people are actually under impression that that's a Harry Weiss building there when they come in the main entry. And all that is addition from 23 years ago. At the time, one of the best glasses they had to resist solar gain was the black glass. And unfortunately, it has some characters of that fortress-like foreboding character. And it's not original to the Weiss. And so one of the first reactions I had to Paul's request and their mission, which I'm very enthused about, by the way, was to re-glaze that entire black glass facade in clear glass. Today, we have coatings that reflect the sun's radiation but allow you to see in. It wasn't available just 23 years ago. So we can make this building visually accessible and transparent without affecting anything that Weiss did originally to the building, because that's all a very, very recent contemporary expansion.
One of the things I think that is so interesting about the discussion that all of this has provoked is how much do you pay homage to the history of it, the historic preservation part of it, and how much do you say, well, you know, we need to adapt this for our modern lives? Would it make sense architecturally to take it back to what Harry Weese did originally, or is that not suitable for how we live now?
I think that it's probably not particularly feasible. You know, one thing a lot of people are not aware of, but some people will recall, about 20 years into its life, the Harry Weese building started shedding its white marble cladding. They had clad the whole building in a white, very beautiful, snow-white Italian travertine marble. And unfortunately, 20 years in, pieces started falling off. It was put on only an inch thick. And at that time, the county made the decision that to safeguard the public, at the cost of multi-millions, they had to take all the white marble off, and they installed a buff limestone from our region here. And so, you know, at that point, the building lost all its original material. I think that's not widely known in the community. So, you know, there really isn't any original material that exists on the building at this time.
It's just the footprint.
The footprint. However, for example, the Harry Weese building originally had three colonnades, one on the south facing the gardens, the entry colonnade facing east onto North Water, and the State Street colonnade. Now, at this point, two of the three have been lost. The north one was all filled in 20 years ago to create bathrooms and storage rooms. The east one was torn off for the new curving glass, black glass entry. And then the south one still exists, but all of its white travertine was torn off, and a granite base and a local limestone was added. So, you know, we've been surprised to have people suggest in the preservation community that it's still an extant historic building by Harry Weese. By the normal criteria that brought to bear to identify a historic building, this one doesn't make it. And I sat on Milwaukee's Preservation Commission for 17 years.
And so we're looking at something that was once a Harry Weese building and is no longer.
That's my opinion, and I think we got good evidence on that.
You know, and Bonnie, one image that you don't have in front of you, because there's much more that we're doing around the building, just to your point earlier about adapting the building. On the west side, which is on the Riverwalk side of the building, that's where First Stage performs in Todd Ware Theater. And they are tremendously successful, do wonderful theater for the entire family. They have said to us when we worked with them, we need a larger lobby. We need more space. And so as we looked at it, HGA came up with a very creative curvilinear atrium for that space so that they then could expand their lobby. But secondly, in addition to that, and this is not a fault of Harry Weese, but when the building was built in 1969, ADA standards did not exist. Every renovation we've done since that time, since ADA came into the law, has been to make improvements in the building so that it's more accessible.
Well, we have to talk about the Grove, because that was probably the thing that received the biggest public pushback. Initially, the idea was to remove the Dan Kiley Grove. Is that still the case? What's happening with that part of it? Probably in some ways the most visible part of this.
That is the case. First of all, we start with the fact that our entire grounds is an integrated plan, and it's for that reason we had to look at the entire grounds. For example, we really have to address stormwater runoff issues. We have issues because we're right on the river. How do we change from a system that runoff just runs right into the river to now what we want to build, which is a filtered system, so that that water is filtered. It can then feed the trees, feed the grass, feed the plants. And we added bioswales around the outer edge of the grounds. Those serve a dual purpose, both in terms of what we're trying to do to reduce stormwater runoff and put cleaner water into the river, be good environmental stewards. But secondly, it serves a purpose about increasing security on the grounds, which was something that people didn't need to think about in 1969. So without being real specific, because we don't like to be too specific about security improvements, those bioswales do serve a dual purpose, and the grounds will be much more secure as a result of it.
In the rendering that I'm looking at, there are still trees there. So what's happening? Are those the chestnuts or are they something else?
Those are honey locust trees. We did a lot of research as to the most appropriate tree, urban tree today. We had to address a couple of other issues. I mentioned handicapped accessibility. That grove, which is about 30% of our grounds, again, not the fault of Dan Kiley because the standards didn't exist, but it is not physically accessible and really can't be without removing those trees and having that ground be full surface so that people who are anybody's who's on the grounds, but particularly the people in wheelchairs, can see right at the Peck Pavilion stage because we're removing that very ugly sound booth at the back
that,
of the
that
stage.
Barrier,
that,
yeah.
That barrier.
Yep.
And then ironically, what we found in our research, what our landscape architects and our arborists found in the research was that there was a design flaw to begin with. Those trees were planted too close together to begin with. For the size of the tree, what you don't see above ground but below ground. The root balls are so huge. We're working with Dwayne Sturber from Woodward Forest Products, who's got a whole plan for repurposing all that wood. And it clearly is a problem. Those trees are not going to survive. We have four that have to come down now, and then another five next year. And after that, most of the rest of the trees. They're rated from very poor to fair. And so we have a situation, ironically, where we're faced with this issue of historic preservation for the entire building and grounds because of an initial objection only over the tree grove. And the tree grove just cannot continue to exist. However, I would say that I think Jim did a great job of respecting the history because of the linear nature of which those rows of trees are planted. 16 very mature trees which have already been selected. They're a much better urban tree to allow shade and light on those grounds. So we think he did a good job of honoring the history of the grove and at the same time adapting it so we can get greater use for free community programming on the grounds.
Were you surprised at the community pushback about the trees?
No, I don't think so. I think we had discussed beforehand that removing the Kiley Grove was going to be very controversial. And, you know, I've been in the preservation community for a very long time and understand how passionate people are about preserving things. I think one of the challenges is that unlike a Cream City brick building in Milwaukee, trees, a grove of trees, they're a living thing. And they, I know people don't want to admit to themselves that these trees might be at the end of their life as a grove, but that really appears to be the case. And they're not going to live forever. And when we start, arborist, we have information that looks like 9 of them are in poor or very poor condition. That's 25% of the 36 existing trees. When the aesthetic of the grove is based on 36 identical trees, all the same species, all planted at the same time, at some point when those trees start to age out, something has to be done on the grove. You know, the Marcus Center 20 years ago contacted the Kiley office, said, "What do we do when some of these trees start to die?" And they said, "Well, you cut them." So it was a pretty simple recipe there. You know, we feel bad that the life of the grove probably has reached the end of its time span, but that really appears to be the case. Now, you know, the proposal that we have, Kiley has 4 rows of 9 for a total of 36 trees. We're proposing to, in the same holes, replant 18 of the trees, the 2 perimeter rows. So the mass of that grove will still be there. Kiley's green space will be replaced with a green space. There's no building construction going on there. We're simply trying to make the thing accessible, make the thing useful for the mission of the Marcus Center. You know, I used to be an usher there in the 1970s, been around Milwaukee a long time. And I knew the building so well as a young architecture student that I was the guy that helped the bomb squad search when they got bomb threats. So I know the building really well, and it's an advantage for renovation, let me tell you. And so I really care about the Marcus Center, and I'm really also really bought into what they're trying to do to bring the whole community together for affordable entertainment. And when we have an opportunity to build a part of a landscape that can work with the Peck Pavilion and have free performances out there for the public, a really broad variety of entertainment. I'm really with that mission. And if we can build a landscape that supports that so people could sit on a lawn and for free see and hear a performance, that's a really cool thing. And right now, you know, Marcus Center's worked for 49 years since I was a young usher there. And they found that the Grove has not been useful for performances. And 49 years, I think, turns out to be enough.
So where are you in the process of all of this? I know there have been a number of meetings with the Historic Preservation Committee in the city, and things kind of had to come to a halt while those proposals or objections were being considered. Where are you now?
Where we are now is on April 1st, there'll be a hearing on the permanent designation for the building. But what's still pending as well is that once you get a temporary designation, which they put on in February, you can't do anything to the exterior of the building or the grounds. And so we would need permission to remove the trees that are dead now. And our public hazard, based on advice from our attorney and our arborist and our insurance company, we have to have those trees removed if we're going to be able to continue with our summer programming this summer. At the very least, in order to program this summer, we've got to have those trees removed so we can get the cyclone fencing down.
One last question I want to throw into the mix here. I mean, since we made the appointment for you two to come in to talk about this, we now have the 2020 Democratic National Convention in about 18 months' time. Are you hoping to have most of this done by then so people can, the 50,000 people who are going to descend on Milwaukee, when they're not at the Fiserv Forum, can maybe be taking in a performance?
Well, that's our plan. I will tell you, Bonnie, that within 15 minutes after the morning teas went out on Monday morning, we had our first call to book space in our building. We've been participating in those discussions about holding space available, but obviously the grounds would be a key part of that. And to the extent that there's an economic impact, there's a positive economic impact for us if the grounds are completed in time for that convention, because that will enable us to generate some additional income in addition to the free programming that we will have, which will still be going on, and we'll have to work around that schedule. But that is another great opportunity that we want to be able to, like any other venue or town or hotel or what have you, want to take advantage of.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, all of that plays out. And I'm hoping that once things are finalized and you know where things are, you'll come back and we'll talk about what the final plans look like and the timeline and all of that.
Absolutely. We would be glad to do that.
Great to come back.
Paul Matthews is the president and CEO of the Marcus Performing Arts Center. Jim Shields is design principal at HGA and the lead designer on the Marcus Center project. You can see a PDF of Shields' proposed design and hear Mary Louise's argument against destroying the Chestnut Grove at WUWM.com.
The Milwaukee Historic Preservation Commission is holding a public meeting today at 3 p.m. in City Hall to determine whether or not permanent historic status is granted.